Here it is. Well, it's a great pleasure to be speaking here. So I'm going to be talking about V2 periodic homotopy groups at large primes bigger than or equal to 5. Now, this talk is called The Homotopy Groups of the E2 Local Sphere at P greater than or equal to 5 Revisited, because this computation was actually already done by Shimomura Yaba more than a decade ago. But this is kind of a revisiting of the computation to simplify the computation and to also fix some errors that happened in the computation just because the computation was really complicated. So let me review some chromatic theory. So let's let pi star s localized at p denote the p local stable homotopy groups of spheres. We're interested in these things. And these things admit a filtration. That filtration is called the chromatic filtration. And one of the features of this filtration is that the nth layer of this filtration exhibits periodic behavior. This periodic behavior is called Vn periodicity. And the fundamental period of these periodic families is the degree of this guy Vn, which is 2 times p to the n minus 1. You should be seeing 2 times p to the n minus 1 periodic phenomena in the nth layer. Now, this filtration arises topologically from a tower of localization. You start with the rational sphere, and then you've got the E1 local sphere, E2 local sphere. You've got this whole tower, and the inverse limit of this tower is the P local sphere. So inductively, you want to work your way up the tower. If you want to work your way up the tower, then you need to understand the fibers of the tower. And let's let the nth layer is the nth monochromatic layer, which is the homotopy fiber of the map from SEN to SEN minus 1. So we really want to understand these MNSs. So I want to demonstrate what this chromatic picture means in terms of computations by illustrating it in the homotopy groups of the P local sphere for the prime 5. So these low-dimensional stable homotopy groups were computed by Ravenel through around 1,000 stem or so. And this is a picture due to Alan Hatcher of the computation. Now, if you haven't seen these sorts of pictures before, I just want to describe briefly how to read this picture. So the x-axis here, this is the stem. So if you want to know what pi ks is, k is down here. And then there is no y-axis, in the sense that the vertical arrangement of these dots is entirely arbitrary, but done in a manner to suggest patterns. Each one of these dots represents a z mod p, a z mod 5, because we're working at the prime 5. And vertical lines between the dots indicate hidden extensions between these z mod 5. So like these two dots over here in pi 39 make a z mod 25, and these three dots in pi 199 make a z mod 125. Now in this picture you see a very regular pattern at the bottom, like a ruler. This is the V1 periodic pattern. This is also known as the image of the J homomorphism. And as the picture illustrates, the fundamental period between any of these two dots is the quantity 2 times p minus 1, which for the prime 5 is 8. Now you look up here at these diagonal guys, and you see that there's also a much more complicated pattern going on. And in between each one of these guys is the period 2 times p squared minus 1, which for the prime 5 is 48. So this suggests a kind of higher periodic pattern. I've written down here V2 periodic. But there's a little problem here. I've actually lied. Namely, although it appears as if all these guys are fitting into some kind of periodic pattern, what I've crossed out with this sort of squiggly line is stuff that peters out just past this range, like around, you know, just like over here somewhere, that stuff peters out. So in fact, only about half of it is really truly V2 periodic. So this true V2 periodic part, I mean, this is what I've highlighted here, is actually what is, honestly, V2 periodic. And, you know, we have this period. Now, you wouldn't really know what you were looking for unless you knew it was here, but the V3 periodic stuff is represented by this stuff over here. And here you can see the period is 2 times p cubed minus 1, which for the prime 5 is 248. Now, the V1 periodic patterns at all primes is completely understood. It's been understood since the 60s and 70s. The V2 periodic stuff, well, because my talk is about V2 periodic homotopy, we must not know everything about it yet. But in fact, at the primes 2 and 3, much remains mysterious. and I'm talking about primes bigger than or equal to 5, where things are easier. And almost nothing is known about V3 periodicity and higher. That's the state of affairs. The most fundamental VN periodic elements are called the Greek letter elements. And these guys have names. And their names use Greek letters, which is why they're called Greek letter elements. The V1 periodic guys have names like alpha I over J. The V2 periodic guys have names like beta I over JK for various indices I, J, and K. The V3 periodic guys have names like gamma I over JKL, etc. So let me describe how this naming convention works in the context of the V1 periodic family. So I'm going to zoom in on it, and I'm going to assign generators to these various Z mod P's. So alpha 1 generates this guy, alpha 2 generates this guy, alpha 3, alpha 4. Alpha 5 generates this guy, but alpha 5 is 5 divisible, giving me a Z mod 25 generated by alpha 5 over 2. You got alpha 6, alpha 7, alpha 8, alpha 9, and then alpha 10 is 5 divisible, and you get alpha 10 over 2. Keep going. Every 5 of these guys, you get a Z mod 25. And then every 25 of these guys, you get a Z mod 125, where here it's generated by alpha 25 over 3. And, in general, that's the pattern. So this notation, alpha I over J, represents a P to the J torsion element. And then we use this convention where if J is equal to 1, we just call alpha I over 1. Now this pattern, this very regular pattern where you got, Z mod P's, but every P you got a Z mod P squared, and then every P squared you got a Z mod P cubed, etc. That's a very important pattern that's going to show up throughout our computations, and so I want to call this an image of J pattern because it's the image of the J homomorphism. The beta family shows up as the kind of edge of the V2 periodic elements in this picture. So to properly describe the naming of the beta family, I'm going to zoom in on this little region over here. And what you see is you see that just like the V1 periodic elements have various P torsion patterns in them, the V2 periodic elements have various V1 torsion patterns within them. So here you've got this guy 5 over 4, and multiplication by V1 sends it to 5 over 3, multiplication by V1 sends it to 5 over 2, then 5, and then multiplication by V1 on this guy is 0. So it's a V1 torsion pattern. So we use this V1 torsion to give Greek letter names to this beta family. So you got beta 1, beta 2, beta 3, beta 4. And then you get over here to beta 5 over 4, and then beta 5 over 3, beta 5 over 2, and then multiplication by V1 on that gives me beta 5, and then this guy is V1 torsion. So in general, you've got guys beta I over JK, and these guys are P to the K torsion, that's what the K means. And the way these indices work is that multiplication by V2 raises the I by 1, multiplication by V1 decreases J by 1, and multiplication by P decreases K by 1. And then we have some conventions. If K is equal to 1, beta I over J is just called beta, is used for beta I over J1, and if J is equal to 1, then beta I denotes beta I over 1. So this beta family the question is, what I, J, and K, for which I, J, and K is there a beta guy? And this pattern is completely determined by Miller, Ravenel, Wilson in their 77 Annals paper. So you start with beta 1, and you got beta 2, so you get up to beta P. And then beta P is V1 divisible, you get back to beta P over P. And then you've got just beta P plus 1, beta P plus 2, until you get up to beta 2P, and then that guy is V1 divisible all the way back to beta 2p over p. And you keep on going like that until you get up to beta p squared. Then beta p squared is v1 divisible all the way back to beta p squared over p squared plus p minus 1. And then all these guys are just generate z mod 5s, but this guy, beta p squared over p, this guy actually turns out to be 5 divisible. And so there's a z mod 25 over here generated by beta p squared over p comma 2. Let's go to the general case. So you get up to beta p to the n, and this guy is V1 divisible all the way back to beta p to the n over p to the n plus p to the n minus 1 minus 1. And then all these guys, and then, well, then every 5, though, or every p, you're p divisible. So you get back to beta p to the n over p, and this thing is p divisible, giving you beta p to the n over p comma 2. You're over here to beta p to the n over 2p, and it's p divisible, beta p to the n over 2p comma 2. And so you get back to beta p to the n over p squared, and this guy is p squared divisible, giving me a beta p to the n over p squared comma 3. However, these divisibilities make this thing look like an image of J pattern, but they're slightly truncated image of J patterns, because this p divisibility doesn't go all the way back, it actually truncates. It only goes back as far as p to the n minus 1 plus p to the n minus 2 minus p. And the beta p squared, or the p squared divisibility of these guys over here, that only goes back to beta p to the n over p to the n minus 2 plus p to the n minus 3 minus p squared, etc. So, does this make sense? I've completely described the pattern, okay? It's a little more complicated, the image of J pattern, but I think it's understandable. Okay. Anyway, so how were these things computed? Well, so I was showing you pictures in the second monochromatic layer. I'm not saying anything about the sphere. I'm talking about the second monochromatic layer in the E2 local sphere. So how are these computations done? Well, you need to compute the homotopy groups of the second monochromatic layer. And so you use the Adams-Novikov spectral sequence. That starts with X BP star BP of BP star BP star M2. And this BP star homology of the second monochromatic layer is described as BP star mod P infinity comma V1 infinity with V2 inverted. Now, just to explain something here. So this mod P infinity mod V1 infinity, if you don't know what I mean by this, if I was to write something like Z mod P infinity, that's supposed to denote the co-limit over N of Z mod P to the N, or if you like to think about it, you could think about it as Q mod Z localized to P. And if you think about it this way, then you could represent elements of this guy as like fractions, A over B, or maybe A over, I just have to denote the denominator, like some denominator like that, where A is an integer, and that'll completely describe the elements in this group over here. And I'll similarly denote, say, like K adjoin X mod X infinity. What this means is you could view it either as the co-limit of K adjoin X mod X to the N, or you could think about it as the what you get when you take K adjoin X and you invert X, and then but then you mod out by K adjoin X. And so then similarly, you could regard elements of this thing as being like fractions, like, I don't know, f of X over X to the I, or f of X and then K adjoin X. All right, so maybe it's okay if I kind of turn this off now. So that's what this mod P infinity V1 infinity means. Now this is a long thing to write, so we're just going to follow convention and abbreviate this as HSTM02. Now for P greater than or equal to 5, it turns out that these cohomology groups, HSTM02, are 0 for S bigger than 4. And then for degree reasons, they're also 0 for T not congruent to 0 mod Q. Where Q is always going to denote the quantity 2 times P minus 1. Now these two facts together actually ensure that this Adams-Novikov spectral sequence collapses for these large primes, which makes these large primes easy. And so really, if we want to compute the homotopy groups of the second monochromatic layer, we just need to compute the cohomology of M02, and that's what we're going to do. So let's get back to this beta family over here. So the beta family actually corresponds to H naught star of M02. So the zero line of the Adams-Novikov spectral sequence is precisely what the beta family is. And the beta I over JK guy corresponds to a guy in H0 with name V2 to the I over P to the K, V1 to the J. Now the rest of the V2 family is highlighted in purple. And so the purple stuff corresponds to HS star for S bigger than zero. And my goal in this talk is to understand the purple stuff as lucidly as I've described the beta family. So I gave you what I believe is an understandable description of the beta family. I should be able to understand the rest of it just as well. And so that's what I want to do. So what is the strategy for computing these cohomology of M02s? Well, again, this is outlined in Miller, Ravenel, Wilson. So what do you do? So you want to compute the cohomology of M02. So that's X to VP star mod P infinity V1 infinity. Well, there's a V0 Bachstein spectral sequence that will start with X to VP star mod P V1 infinity and converge to X VP star mod P infinity V1 infinity. And so this guy over here is called the cohomology of M11. And then there's a V1 Bachstein spectral sequence that will go from X to VP star mod P V1, and it'll converge to X to VP star mod P V1 infinity. And this guy over here is called cohomology of M20. Now this cohomology of M20, Moravec's change of rings theorem shows it's isomorphic to the cohomology of a group, namely the cohomology of the Moravec stabilizer group with these coefficients. Now the beauty of this program is that these guys are completely computable. If you know what you're doing, you should be able to compute these things. Okay? And so then you just have to compute this sequence of spectral sequences to get to the desired answer. So this computation of the cohomology of the second Moravec stabilizer group was performed by Ravenel, also in 1977. And then the V1 Bachstein spectral sequence, this was completely understood by Shimomura in 86. And then Shimomura Yaba, as I mentioned before, computed cohomology of M02 using the V0 Bachstein spectral sequence. They did this in 1995. Now, these computations can be characterized as follows. So the Ravenel computation you should regard as easy. I mean, it's beautiful. It's one of those things that you must look at, but it's as I said, if you know what you're doing, then he does what you're supposed to do and gets the answer, and it's good. The Shimomura 86 computation is pretty complicated, but at the end I would say it's understandable. Okay? It's very nice. It's understandable. However, the Shimomura Yaba 95 computation of the cohomology M02 I characterize as incomprehensible. And let me explain what I mean by incomprehensible. So this is the main theorem from Shimomura Yaba 1995. And it presents the cohomology of M02 as isomorphic to a direct sum of all of these different groups. Okay? And these different modules are defined using these definitions. And there's a second page. And these definitions involve guys like A sub N and like A capital N. And here, A sub N is the quantity P to the N plus P to the N minus 1 minus 1. We already saw this guy in the description of the beta family. And the capital A sub N is the quantity, is kind of a sister to the little a n, is the quantity p to the n minus 1 plus p to the n minus 2 plus dot 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 plus 1 all times p plus 1. Now, I mean, this is actually an amazing computation given the fact that it's so complicated and they managed to do it. But to sort of highlight some of the problems with this computation, I'd like to focus in, just to choose a module at random, let's look at Y1C infinity. So, So according to this theorem, it's generated by V2 to the TP squared minus 1 times P to the N H0 over P to the L V1 to the K P to the I plus 1 for various conditions on T, N, L, K, and I. And these conditions are as follows. So L is equal to N plus 1 if K is equal to 0. But for K bigger than 0 with K P to the I bigger than A N minus I, L is equal to I, which has to be bigger than 0, for kp to the I between p to the n plus 2 minus p to the n and p to the n plus 2 minus p to the n plus a n minus I plus 1 plus 2, but kp to the I has to be bigger than or equal to p to the n plus 2 minus p to the n plus a n minus I plus 2 if p divides k. However, L equals I plus 1 if I equals 0 and P divides K plus P to the N minus I for KP to the I equal to, of the form, P squared minus 1 P to the N, or if KP to the I is less than P to the N plus 2 minus P to the N, P not dividing K plus P to the N minus I, and I has to be bigger than 0 and less than or equal to N, etc. It keeps going. If you actually wanted to exhibit a particular homotopy group of the E2 local sphere from this computation, it would be almost impossible. In fact, even the logic of which one of these conditions depends or doesn't depend on the other is ambiguous from this presentation, and I personally was unable to write down this module from this description without doing the whole computation. So it's pretty complicated. And this, in some sense, should make us somewhat sad, because we could understand the beta family so well. Why should the whole answer be so hard to understand? So that's the reason for doing this. So we're going to give a simpler presentation of this answer. This presentation is going to be more conceptual. And the nature of its conceptual nature actually highlighted mistakes in the Shimomura-Yaba computation. And so this allowed me to fix some errors in their computation. Now, I have to defend Shimomura-Yaba. These mistakes weren't like mathematical in nature. It wasn't like they had some huge mathematical error in the computation. It's an amazing computation. Everything is essentially right in it, except the complexity of these indices makes it only natural for humans to introduce bookkeeping errors and mistakes as you go through this whole thing, and eventually things get messed up. And so if you have a sort of overriding conceptual idea behind these computations, you don't make these kinds of bookkeeping errors because they don't fit with the philosophy of the patterns. So that's the idea. Okay, so I want to describe these things. So I have to go through this whole sort of thing where we compute the cohomology of M02 and then the cohomology of M11 and then the cohomology of M02. Okay, we're doing the whole thing. So I got to start with the Ravenel computation of the cohomology of M20. So the cohomology of M20, basically is generated by these six dots, and these six dots are multiplied by they're V2 periodic. So here's V2 times those six dots, then V2 squared, etc. Then V2 inverse times those guys, V2 minus 2 is over here, etc. So you got a V2 periodic pattern on these six dots over here, and these dots have names. One is this guy over here on the zero line. H0 and H1 are the two guys on the one line. G0 and G1 are the ones on the two line. And this guy over here is H0 G1, which is also equal to H0 G1, which is equal to H1 G0. And this whole pattern is actually tensored with an exterior algebra on zeta, where zeta is a class of bidegree 1, 0. Yes? Nope, just T, yeah. It makes it slightly more convenient because that allows me to align the dots versus making them shift diagonally slightly. Okay, so now I run the V1 Bachstein spectral sequence. And so that starts with the cohomology of M20, tensor FP adjoined V1 mod V1 infinity, and converges to cohomology of M11. So what does this spectral sequence do? First off, let me introduce some notation. So elements in this E1 term are going to be denoted x over V1 to the j using this idea over here, where x is an element of the cohomology of M20 and j is bigger than 0. All right, so what does this thing, the E1 term of this V1 Bachstein spectral sequence looks like this. We just take the cohomology of M20 and we just formally put these, we formally attach infinite V1 divisibility to each one of these elements. So this is regarded by these blue tails that go on forever off each one of these dots. And let me note, in this picture, I've omitted the zeta factor. And then you run some differentials. So the differentials in the vicinity of V2 and V2 squared happen to look like this. So these guys kill these guys infinitely back. These tails kill these tails. This tail kills this tail, etc. Now, drawing these infinite tails with all these differentials is too cumbersome, so I'm going to introduce a graphical shorthand to represent these patterns of differentials. Namely, I'm going to draw a little purple hook to denote a tail killing another tail. So this little purple hook denotes this phenomenon. This one's a little longer to denote that this tail has to go a little farther before it can start killing this tail, etc. And then, well, once I have those purple hooks, I can just forget about the tails, because the purple hooks encode everything about the differentials. So my differentials are going to look like these purple hooks. Now, you can read off the E infinity term from these purple hooks by just losing what they hit and where they start. So for instance, here, this dot corresponds to this dot here, these two dots in the E infinity. This is like this guy times V1 is this guy, that corresponds to this, and this guy up here is this guy. So you get this little nice little pattern coming in the cohomology of M11. So here's an illustration of these patterns of differentials done for the prime 5. So you got V2, and you got this little pattern that I showed you, and V2 squared, same pattern. V2 cubed, same pattern. Then when you get up in the vicinity of V2 to the fifth, you get a slightly more complicated pattern. And then, well, again, simple, 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 slightly more complicated, simple, 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 slightly more complicated, keeps going until you get up to V2 to the 25th, and then it becomes much more complicated. That's what it looks like over there. However, one thing I'd like to highlight about these various patterns is that the slightly more complicated pattern only involves V2 to the p and V2 to the p minus 1. Or here's V2 to the 2p, V2 to the 2p minus 1, etc. And then when you get to p squared, it only involves V2 to the p squared, V2 to the p squared minus 1, V2 to the p squared minus p, and V2 to the p squared minus p minus 1. And this intervening phenomenon is actually just a simple pattern and can be ignored. It's already taken care of. These patterns, getting from simple to complicated to more complicated, can be inductively constructed. Once you understand the pattern in the vicinity of V2 to the sp to the n minus 1, you can then construct the pattern in the vicinity of V2 to the sp to the n. So here is the pattern in the vicinity of V2 to the sp over here. So there's the inductive construction. So you start with that guy, and then the next step is you double the pattern. Then what you do is you remove some differentials. So you delete the following differentials: the rightmost longest differential on the 0 line, the 2 longest differentials on the 1 line, and the leftmost longest differential on the 2 line. The fourth step, you have to add some differentials. Oops, what happened here? There it goes. So here you've got you get this new longer differential on the 0 line and this new longer differential on the 2 line. Now once you add those two longer differentials, you are left with 4 dots, and they have to be connected. And the rule is you connect the two closest dots and the two farthest dots together with differentials. And that's the pattern. So I'm drawing the first few patterns here. So here's the vicinity of V2 to the S, V2 to the sp, V2 to the sp squared, and V2 to the sp cubed, using that inductive construction of differentials. Well, then I can read off from those hook diagrams the cohomology of M11 and the vicinities of these generators. So in the vicinity of V2 to the s, you get this pattern. V2 to the sp, you get this pattern. V2 to the sp squared, you get this pattern. And V2 to the sp cubed, you get this pattern. And you can, in general, produce these patterns as far as you want to using this inductive process. Now, these patterns have a remarkable feature to them that I want to highlight. Namely, take one of these patterns and rotate it 180 degrees. And it's the same. And this is a consequence of Gross-Hopkins duality. So, why? How does Gross-Hopkins duality predict such a thing? Well, so I have to just recall some things. So the K2 local Picard group, this is the collection of invertible objects in the K2 local stable homotopy category. These are like K2 local spheres, if you like. These guys are this is isomorphic to Z mod 2 P squared minus 1 cross a P addix cross a P addix. But I can represent any element in this in this Picard group in the following way. So you take the K, so you've got the K2 local sphere to the A plus B V2, but here A is between 0 and the degree of V2, and B is a arbitrary element of the p-adics. So these guys over here, these spheres, these p-adically interpolate the classical spheres. This is something that, that Mike Hopkins introduced, this idea. But then these powers of the determinant, these guys produce twisted spheres. And I'm allowed to take powers of this determinant for any C in the p-adic. So that gives me a host of a kind of a two-dimensional p-adic family of spheres that I have allocated to me. Then, and one of those dimensions is taken up by a p-adic interpolation of the classical spheres. The theorem of Gross and Hopkins says that for p greater than or equal to 5, if you take the Brown commonance dual of the second monochromatic layer, then it's equivalent to the K2 local 2 sphere, but then you have to twist it by this determinant. So it's a twisted sphere. So this says that the dual of the second monochromatic layer is, in essence, a twisted version of the second monochromatic layer. However, when you take the mod p Mohr spectrum, that is, if you work mod p, and we're doing that because we're working with the cohomology of M11, then if you twist the mod p Mohr spectrum with this determinant, it actually is a p-adic suspension of the mod p Mohr spectrum itself. So this twist doesn't show up, and the duality between the sphere and a twist of the sphere becomes a self-duality of the mod p Mohr spectrum with itself. That's why we have this self-duality. All right, so I have to keep going. So now I have to compute the V0 Bachstein spectral sequence. So this thing starts with the cohomology of M11, tensored with an FP adjoined V0, mod V0 to the infinity, and it converges to the cohomology of M02. So here's a picture of the V0 Bachstein spectral sequence. This was computed by Shimomura Yaba. This is what they did, okay? And this is a computation in the vicinity of V2 to the 25 for the prime 5. And I've drawn in all of the Shimomura Yaba differentials. And I like these little parentheses here indicate like Z mod P squares, and the double parentheses indicate Z mod P cubes, etc. Now, what I did is I first had to write down the cohomology of M11, I had to take this light blue pattern, which is the cohomology, which shows up in the cohomology of M11. But you have to remember there's that zeta guy floating around that I almost forgot about. And that zeta guy duplicates it as a shifted up dark blue pattern. So the light blue pattern and then zeta times it is the dark blue pattern. And when you look at these differentials, well, some of the differentials connect light blue lines to light blue lines, and some of the differentials go from a light blue line to a dark blue line. So whereas before, the zeta factor and the non-zeta factor acted independently of each other in these spectral sequences, now there's differentials between the two guys. And this causes for massive additional confusion. Okay? So zeta is a bad guy. So the solution is to get rid of zeta. And so this is a concoction called the projective V0 Bachstein spectral sequence. And this was first described to me by Hans Werner Henn. He and his collaborators, Gors, Henn, Karamanov, Moholy-Nagy, are actually using this to completely compute the second monochromatic layer at the prime 3, which, you know, Shimomura and Wang have their own approach that follows these lines that is even more complicated, and they're trying to understand that even more complicated calculation. I'm not trying to understand anything as complicated as the prime 3. I'm working at the easy primes, and still I don't understand, okay? So they actually invented this to deal with this even harder situation. So the Morava change of rings theorem, so let me describe the projective V0 Bachstein spectral sequence. Morava change of rings theorem says that the cohomology of M02 is isomorphic to the cohomology of the Morava stabilizer group with coefficients in E2 star mod P infinity V1 infinity. And here this E2 star is Morava E theory. It's this Lubin-Tait theory. Now, the projective Morava stabilizer group is what you get when you take the Morava stabilizer group and you mod out by its center. So you got a center, ZP cross, and then S2 mod ZP cross is this PS2 that I'm calling it. Well, associated to this short exact sequence of groups is a Lindon-Hochschild-Sayre spectral sequence. that starts with the cohomology of PS2 with coefficients in the cohomology of ZP cross, and it converges to the cohomology of S2. Now, a key fact here that makes this whole thing work out is this guy over here. Namely, this HST of ZP cross with coefficients in E2 star mod P infinity V1 infinity, this turns out to just be concentrated on the S equals 0 line. And it's equal to E2 star mod P to the K V1 infinity when you write T of the form P minus 1 times P to the K minus 1 times T prime. And it's 0 otherwise. So that means this Linden-Hochschild-Serre spectral sequence actually collapses, and it shows that the cohomology, this cohomology we're interested in can be computed in terms of the cohomology of the projective Moravec stabilizer group with these simpler coefficients. I mean, they're simpler due to this key fact. All right, I have it written here. The spectral sequence collapses, and so we get that this is isomorphic to this. Okay. Well, so we're interested in this, but now we can use the p-adic filtration on this module over here to get a spectral sequence. And that spectral sequence that I get is called the projective B0 boson spectral sequence. So what does it look like? Well, it starts with, it's got an E1 term, and it converges to the cohomology of M02, and its E1 term is the cohomology of the projective Moravec stabilizer group with coefficients in E2 mod P V1 infinity, tensored with an FP adjoined V0, and now you just have to mod out by V0 to the K, and T is of the form P minus 1. This is for T of the form P minus 1 times P to the K minus 1 times T prime, and it's 0 otherwise for other T. Now, another key fact that makes this really great is that the cohomology of the projective Moravec stabilizer group with mod P coefficients is actually just the cohomology of M11 modulo the ideal generated by zeta. So this projective Moravec stabilizer group is exactly the guy to get rid of the bad guy zeta. Okay? So we got rid of zeta through this. So let me describe. So I've already shown you the picture of the V0 Bachstein spectral sequence in the vicinity of V2 to the 25th at the prime 5. Let me now show you the projective V0 Bachstein spectral sequence in this vicinity and how much nicer it is. So the cohomology of M11 in this vicinity gives you this pattern tensored with an exterior algebra with zeta. If I'm doing this projective method, I can forget about zeta. So I forget about zeta, and then the E1 term, I just decorate this thing with an image of J pattern. So I just, so it's like every p, I put a z mod p squared. Every 5, I put a z mod 5 squared. And then 25 back, I get a z mod 125, et cetera. And then you get z mod 125s over here and over here. Then I have to fill in much fewer differentials. So the deviation of the thing that, so you know, like the beta family, it's like an image of J pattern, but it got truncated, and the truncation happens via the differentials. So the differentials just come in and truncate the pattern. So I've got a few differentials in this range, much fewer than in the other spectral sequence. Much easier to understand these differentials. So then you get an E infinity term where you just lose the appropriate guys, and you get the answer. Now, just to highlight a familiar face in this zoo here, here's this line over here is the familiar beta pattern. So here you've got this line going back, that's beta p squared, all the way back to beta p squared over p squared plus p minus 1, and this one little guy that's 5 divisible, and that's this guy over here. Now, to illustrate why this is so much better than the classical V0 Bachstein spectral sequence, so what I've done is I've taken this pattern, this is the cohomology of M02, and what I've done is I've color-coded all of those different families that show up in the Shimomura-Yama calculation, and I coded with those colors all the different guys that correspond to these different families. And as you can see, these very easy to understand patterns get scattered randomly throughout these families and make it just completely not understandable. So it's kind of like a Banach-Karsky paradox, where you take something understandable and break it up into two not understand, or in this case, several not understandable things. And So, okay, you got the projective. So let me, I'm just going to show you some differentials in the projective V0 Bachstein spectral sequence. So here's some patterns of differentials. So here in the vicinity of V2, here's the vicinity of V2 to the SP, vicinity of V2 to the SP squared, V2 to the SP cubed. Now, I don't really want you to take away anything from these differentials, except for the fact that they look like they're pretty understandable. But there is some notation I want to teach you out of this, and that's this. I'm using these sort of like a single line, a double line, a triple line, a quadruple line, this sort of thing. I want to explain what I mean by these multiple lines. So this notation works as follows. So having a sequence of k lines means I've got an image of J pattern through this range, except that I have to bound the P torsion with a maximum P torsion P to the K. So let me explain what I mean by way of example at the prime 5. So I'm going to take the image of J pattern at the prime 5. So here's the image of J pattern. And then if I had three lines, that means I have to truncate this thing at Z mod 125. So everything's the same, except these four dots here, that's too many dots. I truncate it when I have the triple line, and it becomes just three dots. And that's what I mean by these three lines. And if I have two lines, I have to truncate it even more. So all these triple dots have to get truncated to double dots, and that's the double line notation. So that's what these lines mean. So it's actually these pictures really tell you you can just read off these pictures what the answer is. It's these image of J patterns, but truncated by various things, and that's what these various number of lines mean. So using this notation, just to illustrate, here I've got the projective V0 Bachstein spectral sequence, and everything's the E1 terms in blue and the E infinity terms in red, and I've just translated this pattern with these Z mod P squares have to show up in double line territory, and the Z mod P cubes have to show up in triple line territory. And the rest are limited to Z mod P's because you're in single line territory. Oh, except I got this here. But there's nothing possible here because you're not in the right place. So it didn't line up right. So I can completely write down the answer. So the cohomology of M02 in the vicinity of V2 to the S looks like this. V2 to the SP, I've got this with some double lines here. Get some double lines and triple lines in V2 to the SP squared, and some double lines, triple lines, quadruple lines in the vicinity of V2 to the SP cubed. Now, I mean, I characterize this as understandable, but it's still a little complicated. You got to know where these lines start and end, where the truncations happen. It's a little hard to keep track of these things, okay? So what I want to do is I want to illustrate a different way of thinking about this computation that makes it as easy to understand as the beta family, okay? So it's just a little reorganization of the information. I mean, this is essentially the computation. So the reorganization is going to go as follows. You see, one of the features in these computations is that, look at this line over here. It's like a single line, and then suddenly it gets a double line over here. It's on the one line, and then it truncates back. So these guys are called the tails. And this tail phenomenon, I want to cut off the tails. So I'm going to cut off the tails, I actually have to forget about some V1 multiplication. So although there's V1 multiplication here, I'm just going to forget that there's these V1 multiplications and then isolate the tails. I'm going to view the tails as their own animals and then join the rest of these families to make new longer families that now have increasing like, you know, triple line, double line, single line, double line, single line, like that. But these are not, don't make it, this picture looks like there's V1 multiplication here, but it's really a broken up family. This is broken up by that, this is broken up by that, this is broken up. With this notion, with these notions, I can describe the cohomology of M02 succinctly in as it's comprised of four families. And these four families are described as follows. So the first one is the familiar beta family. So the beta family corresponds to these guys V2 to the S, P to the N over P to the K, V1 to the J, where S is not congruent to 0 mod P. And as I described at the beginning of this talk, the beta family, well, you've got V1 divisibility all the way back to this quantity A sub N, and then you can have P squared torsion, but that only goes back to AN minus 1, and you can have P cubed torsion, but that only goes back to AN minus 2, etc. Now you get an H1 family, and the H1 family is a kind of broken up version of the beta family. So it goes back like this, but there's these little breaks where you don't have V1 multiplication, and but it still goes back to an minus 1, an minus 1 minus 1, an minus 2 minus 1, etc. Then you've got the H0 family, and the H0 family breaks up into two cases, the generic case and the special case. So the names I'm giving to the H1 family are guys H1, J, K, sub S, P to the N, not these guys. Kind of like beta I over J, K. So the H0 family has names H0, J, K, S, P to the N. And the generic case is S is not congruent to 0 or minus 1 mod P. And in the generic case, this goes all the way back to capital AN plus 2, and then the P squared torsion goes back to capital AN minus 1 plus 2, P cubed torsion goes back to capital AN minus 2 plus 2, etc. The special case, it's just less 1. So it's like the P torsion only goes back to AN minus 1 plus 2 instead of AN plus 2, and the special case happens when S is congruent to minus 1 mod P. And then the P squared torsion goes back to 1 less, and the P cubed torsion goes back to 1 less than above. So it's just a little different behavior. And finally, you've got the G family, which is a broken-up version of the H0 family, much like the H1 family is a broken-up version of the beta family. And the G family, the P torsion goes all the way back to AN plus 1. You have these breaks here that break up between the torsion changes. And here you've got, you know, this goes back to AN plus 1, AN minus 2 plus 1, etc. And then the special case and generic case break up versus whether S is congruent to not congruent to minus 1 mod p or is congruent to minus 1 mod p, and in the special case you go back just a little less, so this only goes back to an, everything's down by 1, it's just, you know, these bounds are just down by 1. Okay, so this is basically the thing I wanted to show you. Okay, now there's one thing I'd like to end this talk with, when I first did this computation, which is, you know, maybe about 6 months ago, I actually got a different answer for the G family than the one I'm showing here, and actually a correspondingly different answer for the H0 family. Namely, my special cases were just slightly different in the G and H0 family. And then I went to talk to Paul Gorse and find out what he and his collaborators are doing at the prime 3, and he described the computations, and they were seeing something that looked analogous to the G family, but where things were slightly different. Namely, they're like what I'm showing on these slides here. And so that seemed wrong to me. It seemed like there must be another mistake somewhere, because my answers were consistent with Shimomura Yaba after I'd made these other, you know, corrections with the bookkeeping or whatever, but I still had this discrepancy between the primes bigger than or equal to 5 and the prime 3, and so that something was wrong. Yet as hard as I looked, I couldn't figure out where the problem was, because it was just too complicated. It would help if I knew what the answer was. If I knew which one of these two alternatives was the truth, then that would help me. You know, it's easier to locate a problem if you know there's a problem than to decide whether there is a problem. Okay? So there was a useful double check to this G family that I was able to perform that also uses Gross-Hopkins duality. And I think this is a cool enough thing that I want to tell you guys about it. So anyway, what Gross-Hopkins duality does is it gives an alternate way for understanding the two line of the second monochromatic layer. Namely, it says that the Pontryagin dual of the two line is isomorphic up to a p-adic degree shift to the zero line of the second monochromatic layer of the determinant twisted sphere. Well, this would all be good if you could understand the determinant twisted sphere, but this determinant twisted sphere is a very mysterious object. What this determinant twisted sphere does is it kind of, you know, messes up the P torsion in a weird way. So here's the beta family over here, and then you can see how the P torsion builds up in the beta family. And this is supposed to be dual to this G family, which is over here. So it's like somehow this, where these single line, double line, triple line, quadruple line get moved around, and I'll get pushed to all these different guys in this dualization. That's the twisting that the determinant performs. So that's weird. It's hard to wrap your head around that. And the way I was able to really understand how this happened was by varying a method that I'd used before to relate the beta family to modular forms. So something that I had looked at before was how to use modular forms via topological modular forms to compute the zero line of the Adams-Novikov spectral sequence for the second monochromatic layer. And a little twisting of this method by the determinant yields a similar thing. They'll do it for the determinant's twisted sphere. It would work for not just the determinant twisted sphere, but any power of determinant twisted sphere. And the way this works, I feel like I have to talk about this because this is a retrospective conference, and so I have to bring TMF in here somehow. And this is the way it's showing up. So this two line can be computed where you take modular forms and you look at the kernel of the map from the second monochromatic layer of TMF to second monochromatic layer of TMF cross second monochromatic layer of TMF 0L. And I look at the kernel of the map that takes a weight k modular form to L to the k minus 2 minus 1 of f of q, comma L to the k minus 1 f of q to the L minus f of q. And these are the same maps that I used for the untwisted sphere, except they're altered by a power of L squared over here and a power of L over here to reflect the maps, the fact that one of these isogeny maps has to be altered by a degree of, you know, determinant of the isogeny was L squared and the determinant of the other isogeny was L. And so these slightly altered form gives the determinant twisted sphere. Anyway, I'll end here.